Okay, today is January 28th, and we are going to close our discussion about Natan. Sorry to say, this is the last day we will be learning about Natan. You know, David had a son named Natan. Most people don't know that.
Yeah, he did.
Did he name him after the prophet? I don't know, but one of his sons was called Natan. It's an interesting trivia question because Natan is a palindrome, Nun Tuf Nun. David's name is a palindrome, Dalet Vav Dalet, and his father, Yishai, is also a palindrome. So three generations in a row.
Oh my gosh.
Where you have the name. Okay. All right, so enough trivia. Let's go into Malachim Aleph. This is the Haftarah of Parshas Chayesara. And if you see what I did on these pages, okay, just to review, Aleph, you see it says Ha'irua, the event. Bet is the words of Natan to Bathsheba. Gimel is the words of Bathsheba to David. See that? Then Natan interrupts, and if you turn around, I should have put a dollar there. Then Divrei Natan, Natan talks, then Divrei David, and David talks. And then we close with the coronation of Shlomo HaMelech. Okay? Now David, we know, offered to God to build a temple, and God told him in Shmuel Bet, you will not, he doesn't say why he won't, but your son will. Okay, in Shmuel Bet, the prophet never tells him why David can't or why his son will. He just says, you won't, your son will. Enough. In Sefer Melachim, when Shlomo builds the temple, and he renders a long speech about this temple and its place and what he did to put it together, in that speech, he reminds the people listening that my father wanted to do this, but God told him not to, and that his son would do it. Okay? So that's what appears between Shmuel Bet and Melachim. Now, in Divrei Hayomim, Book of Chronicles, this event is told four times. And in two of them, it says God that the prophet Natan told David, you will not build this temple, your son Shlomo will. Now, Divrei Hayomim is written hundreds of years after the events have taken place. It's written by Ezra and Nehemiah, the Gemara says. It's written well after the Second Temple is built. And we can say that the authors of Divrei Hayomim put in that word in retrospect when they knew who that person would be. Right? John, you have to go out there and close it from there. Because it won't close from here.
No, that works for this long.
This door too? Mm-hmm. We'll close. Okay. So in Divrei Hayomim, the name Shlomo appears. So according to this, the prophet knew which son of David would build the temple. That's crucial for our story. Okay? Because does Natan have a dog in this race over who should be the next king? You know, he probably does not want Adoniyahu to be king. Because when Adoniyahu does become crown himself king, he doesn't call Natan to be part of the entourage. Now, just you may not sense it when you read the story. We're about to read it now. It's Haftarah. We just read that. Haftarah was a few weeks ago, 2 months ago. Is that when something like this happens, it's like Venezuela now. If you're on the wrong side of the one who actually does become king, it may be dangerous for you. Right? In other words, and it shows up in the middle of this story when Bathsheba tells David, do you know that Adoniyahu has already crowned himself king? And if this goes through, Shlomo and I are in great danger. Why? Does a king kill all his brothers?
Yes.
Maybe.
When he becomes king?
All right, I
know, but Avimelech does that. I know, the reason why does Shlomo have reason to be fearful of Adoniyahu becoming king more than any other of David's children? Would Adoniyahu kill everybody?
He was excluded, certainly, from the party.
So that's the story. Is that the ones who are in danger are the ones who are considered to be a threat?
Yes.
The ones and Shlomo, you know, it would have been the smart thing for Adoniyahu to do to kill Shlomo right away.
Right.
I'm just saying smart in terms of his own best interests, right? So when this kind of thing happens, you don't want to be on the wrong side, right? Now, if Natan already knows which son, he's a prophet, I guess he's paid to know which son, but if he's already predicted it, mm-hmm. You see, in Divrei Hayamim, in all four of those times, the reason why David doesn't get to build it is actually mentioned. You're a man of war. In the end of this week's Torah reading, we learned that you can't even build the God's altar with metal objects because, whatever it is, you shouldn't use a tool of war in the building of a structure that is meant to enhance and extend life, and you are using something that cuts off life. So a man of war should certainly not be the one who builds this place, right? So the not only does the Divrei Hayamim say the temple must be built by a man of peace who doesn't fight wars. Shlomo doesn't fight a single war, at least not until the very end of his life. You know, after he sins, then there's some problems with the Arameans, and the Egyptians. But in terms of the early stages of his kingship, he is a man of peace, and he builds this house of peace. So the prophet, if he did tell David originally, your son Shlomo will. So this is very, very disconcerting to him. Melachim Aleph starts just a few psukim, with how old David seems to be. Mm-hmm. Right, he's still alive. He's still about to give over the kingship to someone else, but he's very old. He's cold. He's frigid. So it's not the picture you get of David in Divrei Hayamim, though. In Divrei Hayamim, David is very virile, and he's setting up the building of the temple, and while he knows he can't build it, he certainly gets his son a big head start, right? I say, Igor, you had a question first?
Yeah, no, because if two people know the secret, maybe there will be more people know the secret that Shlomo will be next king, so that's Adoniyahu. That's why maybe not even tell me exactly David.
Now, it seems from the very end of our story,
yes,
that David, it's not, certainly not written in the Bible.
No.
But that David promised Bathsheba that that Shlomo would be the builder, right? That David promised Bathsheba that Shlomo would be the next king. Now, did he promise the same thing to any of his other wives? I don't know what to tell you on that. Okay, is it possible and likely that Bathsheba was his favorite wife? Yes, and like we know from Yaakov favoring Yosef, it wouldn't be an uncommon thing for David to favor the next king to be from his favorite wife. Right? That sounds reasonable. Okay, so the just the beginning of the story pictures David as someone who's really not in charge. He's not aware of which son of his is ruling, right? And what son, while his father is still alive, crowns himself king in the first place?
It's a replication of Absalom.
Yes, and it's part of the punishment of Bathsheba. In fact, Melachim Aleph has a very different agenda than Divrei Hayamim in presenting the end of David's life. Could they both be true? Yes, in a way. But Divrei Hayamim, in general, we know, is always presents David favorably, always presents the kings of Yehuda favorably, right? To the extent that I think I started the shiur about 4 weeks ago with this, to the extent that Divrei Hayamim just totally skips over the whole story about Bathsheba. The story that leads to Bathsheba is where David sends a peace delegation to the Ammonites, right, when the Ammonite king dies, and they sorely embarrass and insult the delegation, right, by cutting off half their beards and cutting off their pants, right? And David goes to battle for that. He took the bait. So in Divrei Hayomim, it just tells that story, and it says that David went to battle, and in that battle, he defeated the Ammonites. Wow. It's a whole, the whole two chapters are cut out of there. You know what I'm saying? And the whole Avshalom's revolt is not in there. I mean, Divrei Hayomim has a clearly different agenda. It skips practically right to David setting up the building of the temple for Shlomo. Okay.
So somebody read both. I mean, well, let's assume that during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, somebody could read both texts. Why would you have what seems to be irreconcilable texts?
So it's like when you read what might appear to be irreconcilable texts of the same event in the Torah. Did God command sending the scouts, or did Moshe command? Did Yisro suggest to Moshe to add judges, like it says in the Swiss Parsha, or the beginning of Devarim? There's no reference of Yisro. Are these from two different perspectives, explaining two different types of judgments? Okay, that's you know, the creation of man is told in two different chapters. The traditional critical approach is to say that those are two different authors. Mm-hmm. The traditional even scholarly Jewish approach is to talk about the approach of man from two different perspectives. One is the lonely man, alone, and one is a man who is a member of a race in a community and connects to somebody and becomes one flesh with somebody. So I mean, that's how we understand this. The two perspectives are possibly both truthful. Is that one wants to say, I have to close out my material to show how Natan's prediction of what would happen to David for what he did with Bathsheba, that goes on to the very last day of his life. Does that mean that it continued every single day of his life? No. Because Divrei Hayamim records that towards the last few years of David's life, he very heroically set up, and we say these psukim in our daily davening. You know, right after Ashkenazim finished Baruch She'amar, mm-hmm. say Hodu, right? Mm-hmm. Those are psukim in Divrei Hayamim that David said upon completing his Beis Hamikdash preparations. And then we go to the very end of Psukim de Zimri, you know, by Baruch David, Hashem Lenen, Kol V'yom David. That's in the same look, it's in the same section. It's all part of David's praise of God for getting to this stage where he didn't invalidate me from doing this because of what I did with Bathsheba, and add to that the realization that it will be done by her son, right? To close it all out, that not only by my son but by her son, then David does get to go to his end peacefully. God accepted his profound repentance, coupled with perhaps even more profound suffering for the rest of his life, and we have his salvation. Okay, so I must say though that I once did this survey. The word Melech appears approximately once per chapter in the entire Bible, except for one book of the Bible. And in this book, it appears, I think the number is something where between 27 and 30 times per chapter. Huh. What book is that where the word Melech appears more than 20 times more often than the other books of the Bible?
Is it where David HaMelech is? Is it the book where David
HaMelech is? Megillat Esther. Oh.
Megillat Esther, of course. Right.
Okay, every second pasuk has the word Melech two or three times in it.
Right.
All right, so Megillat Esther, the main Melech, of course, is a Persian king who gives, really, it's almost a satire of, this is what a king does? He runs beauty contests. He does beauty. He does 180-day festivals. He goes, shows off his the beauty of his wife. He shows off the beauty, the, all of his gold and his silver, and he goes around drinking all the time. And then, yeah, okay, that's what they do. That's what they did in the time of, you know, the
even now,
lots of kings do that. You know, they just abuse their subjects, and they, you know, they steal from that, you know, with impunity. Until there's a revolution. Okay, so anyway, so Ahasuerus shows us, you know, what really what a king shouldn't be. But I'm sorry, David, one last indignity that we're giving you is that we're going to compare a few little 3 or 4 psukim at the beginning of Melachim Aleph that looks a little like, excuse me, Adam Chas V'Shalom, it's not the same, it's very different, but it still looks a little like some of the lashon, some of the expressions that Melachim Aleph uses about let's look for a young, beautiful woman for to keep you warm. Okay, so that woman is identified. Her name is Avishag Hashunamis. And she'll come up a little later in the story, but now, Shani, you had a question?
Is it known what illness that he had that made him so cold?
The Gemara asks this question, and it says that the angel he saw at the end of Shmuel Bet that came upon Jerusalem. We read about those psukim in the Haggadah, right? Mm-hmm. At the end, the very end of Magid, when the last few psukim, but when you're reading about the 10 plagues, talks about what the cherev means in Egypt. So it says charbash lufa biyado, and the angel is holding the horse on Yerushalayim. Okay, so then seems to be a connection because this comes right after that. These are just the last 3 or 4 psukim of Shmuel Bet. And then you go right into him, and he's freezing cold because his blood froze in him from seeing that angel. There is a moral judgment the Gemara makes, if you recall. Why did David, you ever get such a cold? Remember, it's the dead of summer, I was so freezing, I had to put on a coat and a blanket and sit in the car with the heat on. And it was boiling outside. Nothing can make you warm.
Right, if you have a fever. Right? Yeah, if you're sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would cause David to not get any benefit from clothing? Think moral, a moral. What's the direct? The direct.
It kind of ties with his what he did with Bathsheba.
Okay.
When he cut off.
Right, when he cuts off the garment of the king to show him that he...
Yes, we'll kill him.
That I could have killed you. Remember, he showed Shaul.
Yes. Yeah.
Now he cut off the corner. Now, of course, if you're rabbinic Judaism, but this is the Torah. When you cut off the corner of a garment, you're ruining the tzitzis. It's, you know, the tzitzis needs a corner. So okay, but it's not just a tzitzis. It was not just a mitzvah. It's just that you disparaged clothing, right? Mm. You know. It was someone who never lacked for clothing or never lacked for food doesn't recognize when, you know, when someone wastes clothing or food. Anyone here who grew up in the home of a Holocaust survivor knew you finished every bit of morsel of food on your plate, right? Okay, so the point is that when Chazal, who it considered an extremely legitimate question that Shana asked, what is the nature of this thing? Well, it says he couldn't be warmed. We have experiences like that. But the answer is, the biblical reader always wants, what message is there here? Mm-hmm. What moral is there here? Be careful. Don't waste clothing, because a day may come where you will not be able to be comforted by the warmth of clothing. Mm-hmm. Okay? All right. So let's get now into our...
What is it about seeing an angel? A lot of people do see...
But the angel had a sword in his hand ready to strike, and it gripped him in fear that... Okay, so let's...
That's a quote from the prophet, isn't it? No, it's Joel, I think.
You're thinking Dam Ve'esh V'Simro Sashan, if I believe.
No, Cherev over Yerushalayim.
I think you're thinking of Yoel, that's the end of chapter 3, is Dam Ve'esh V'Simro Sashan, which appears right there.
In the Haggadah, they give a list of words.
Yeah.
And for example, like one of the words is, why
one of the words is about growing, and then they say from Shira Shirim, her breasts grew. And then they have another one, and it's a word about this illustration is the sword spread out over Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. I think it's from Joel.
ומלך השם היה עם גורן הרבנה היבוסי.
It's not in Joel, it's in David.
Yeah, so...
With Avishag in the story, of course, it proves his impotence, so they can begin to plot his succession. You know?
The Gemara has some... We talked about this some time before, and I think I have the on our page here some of the Gemara has a very very broad imagination of what went on between David and Avishag. Because Avishag just felt that if I'm attending to the king, I should be able to, So he said, look, I can't because I already have 18 wives. Right? So she said, well, why don't you divorce one of them and marry me? So, I mean, look, this is rabbinic Judaism about things. No, I'm too old to do that. I want to do that. So he says, you know what? You can't do this. So it was, I certainly can. It's just that I can't take you even as a concubine because I need to repent by not taking you for when I took a woman I shouldn't have. That's in the second parak of Maseches Sanhedrin. Okay, I need to not take you when I can to repent for when I shouldn't have taken someone that I did. Mm-hmm. So then she says, this is the Gemara. Now, here's the crucial point. Did she really say this? No, it's Rava saying this, but it's still a rabbi saying this. In other words, does the rabbi really think she said this? It doesn't really matter. This is how Agadata works.
Right.
That she said to him, the Ganef is too old to steal, and he blames his not stealing on Tshuva.
That he's on Tshuva.
In other words, you're not doing this not because you're repenting from what you did with Bathsheba. You're not doing this because you can't anymore. Right? Well, okay, I don't mean to make light of this. The Rambam always warns us:
tshuva, right?
Make sure you do tshuva in time, because if you wait too long to do tshuva, it's not real tshuva. Right? So you have to be able to do, Ba'osa Makom, Ba'osa Isha, Ba'osa, right? It has to make sure that it's in a time where the tshuva is real, and it's not that you're not doing it because, well, it's not convenient or I can't anymore. Right? Okay, so...
For what it's worth, in Marcel Proust's great novel, Remembrance of Things Past, he reaches the bottom, and then he's turned around to where he discovers his ability to become an artist. He reaches the bottom when he is offered a young girl, and he says, she's my Avishag, the Shunammit. That's a sign of his impotence to do anything in the world anymore.
And he mentions and the name. He says that name?
He used the name Avishag, yeah. And then...
He was Jewish, wasn't he?
So his mother was Jewish, and she never converted. She was a wild daughter, Baruch Weil. Anyway, and that's the bottom point of his life. And from that point, he recreates himself as an artist. Mm-hmm. But that's the bottom point is when he rejects the offer of Avishag.
So in our text,
is Avishag the Shunammit?
Outside of this rabbinic dialogue in the Second Parak in Sanhedrin, in our text, it does just appear that David never had a mind for this. He was freezing cold, and you can't even think of anything. But that's the picture you're getting in Malachim because of this is the end of the Bathsheba atonement, so to say. So the irony is that David ends his life with Bathsheba basically saving him. Because if Adoniyahu becomes king, what do I know about what if? But Adoniyahu becoming king is going to so split the kingdom right away, and so, you can say, well, Shlomo's son split the kingdom too. But it's going to just cause so much death and so much disharmony that Adoniyahu becoming king is David being as though it's in his lifetime he sees his, everything he worked to create destroyed before his eyes. So that the one who, it's that Shlomo becomes king, and let's now get down to business here and start learning this. Probably have to continue next week. Is it says pasuk hey, Adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. Did you see by the Aleph?
Mm-hmm.
Adoniyahu, the son of Chagit. Now Chagit is David's fourth wife. The first wife gave birth to Amnon. He's out of the picture. He was killed for raping his sister. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second child, fascinating, is Avigail's child. Avigail is the perfect wife in Chazal. Now, how do I know? Because when the Gemara says a king who has 18 wives can't have a 19th, even if she's like Avigail. So then, you know, the Mishnah wanted to use an example of, you could say, even if she's like Sarah, even if she's like Rivka. You know, it says, even if she's like Avigail, the only woman in the Bible called both smart and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So the Avigail's child is just mentioned once, and then he never appears again. Chazal like this boy. They say he's one of the four biblical characters who never sinned. They say he was Shlomo's Rebbe in Torah and Halacha. I'm going to say his name, and probably most of you never heard of it. You're going to say that it doesn't even sound like a Jewish name. It's Kilav. Kilav, Kaf Lamed Aleph Bet. Kilav, like to father. I don't know. Kilav, right? So Chazal like him probably because he's not mentioned. All the other boys are fighting over who's going to be the next king, or who's going to rape their sister, or who's going to, right? But this Kilav is just not found. He's not mentioned. So Mustafa, he's like, he doesn't care about what these other brothers are all fighting over. He's satisfied just to be in the palace and do what he needs to do. Right? So he's out of the picture. Who's son number three? Avshalom. Who's son number four? This guy. So he says, all the others are out of the picture. Who's supposed to be king but me? I'm the oldest one left. Right? And that's what he does. Adoniyahu Boch ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. Until now, the only people who rule are someone who, as someone else says, you should rule.
Mm-hmm.
Shmuel appoints Shaul. In all reality, it is Avner who appoints Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth does not become king just because his father died. If not for Avner crowning Ishbosheth, David would have been king over all of Israel right away. Right? I'm just reviewing Shmuel Aleph a little bit here for you, okay? Why did Avner crown Ishbosheth king and not the more obvious case? Because he was loyal to his loyal to the king. His son is still alive. Three of his sons died by the Philistines. One son still remains. I'm going to crown him king. Plus, there was an oracle Tosfos points out that says that there was supposed to be two kings from Binyamin, Melachim Mechalatzecha Yitzeu. So those are the two kings. He only ruled 2 years. All right. Another reason could be is that he thought that, someone from Yehuda won't do me as many favors as someone from Binyamin.
Mm-hmm.
Avner and Ishbosheth were first cousins. All right, so whatever the reason is, when Avner was accused by Ishbosheth for sleeping with the king's former wife, Rizpah Basaya, Avner turns on Ishbosheth and makes a peace pact with David. If you recall, that did not sit well with whom?
Wow.
Yoav, because Avner is about to take my job.
Right.
And kill his mother.
And you killed my brother already, right? And I think you're a traitor against the king for crowning Ishbosheth's king. So Yoav gives Avner the Chomesh treatment. Which he, don't cross Yoav and Shmuel Bet, please. It's not safe. All right, so here, kings are crowned by others. David is crowned by Shmuel. This is the first king that decides himself, I'm running for office. Ani Emloch. I mean, can a president truly be a humble person? If he was humble, he wouldn't have run for president.
Right.
Right? I don't know. Maybe you have to be a, I don't know, psychopath. I don't know. But so until now, kings of Israel are appointed. Okay. Rashi, Ramban considers that Nimrod's rebellion, right? Everyone's, you know, trying to figure out what is in the text that indicates that Nimrod was a bad guy. Ibn Ezra says he was a tzaddik. So Rashi says that he's a rebellious because of his name. His name means let us rebel. Ramban says he's rebellious because he's the first person called a king. He crowned himself king. The Bible doesn't like people who say Ani Emloch. You're king because God sends a prophet to anoint you. It's true about Yeravam. It's true about Yehu. Mm-hmm. Whoever starts a new dynasty, those who don't, Heimim Lichu Velo Mimeni, complains Hosea. They crown kings and they don't do it through me. Yes.
In Bereshit, we have another example, right, of a king, and he also exhibited like bad qualities. Was it Nimrod?
That's what we just spoke about.
Oh, okay.
Nimrod, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Nimrod. Let us rebel. So in chapter 10. Okay, so he says, "Anim v'yaslo rechev u'parashim v'chamishim ish ratzim lefanav." He made for himself chariots and horse-driven wagons, and he had 50 men running before him. That's not such a big deal, but the Gemara tells that they were very special men. Okay. V'lo atzavo aviv miyamav lemor madua kocha asisa. V'gam tu tov toar ma'od v'osei yoda achari avshalom. This pasuk, I think, was just put in by the biblical author to let us know how to raise children. His father never asked him once, "What are you doing?" His father never saddened him with rebuke. So when Mishlei says, if you spare the rod and spoil the child, right? In the Hebrew, it's even harsher. It's chosech shivto sonei bino. Right? So what does it mean, spare
hates
the rod?
His son. Mm-hmm.
So the rod doesn't necessarily, although I'm sure for many generations, they understood it this way, a belt or a stick or a yardstick or a... or something like that, but the rod just means, as it's sometimes used in Tanakh, the shevet apo means the tongue, meaning the discipline. Spare discipline, and you're spoiling your child. No doubt about that. Right? Agree. You know. Right? Yes.
I also had heard that our generation has changed, and that in our generation we don't use the rod anymore because nowadays, if you say something with the words like, people are very sensitive, so it works as a punishment. But before, in previous generations, they were tougher, so that's why they used the rod.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the rod can literally mean that you're hitting someone. I think the contemporary wisdom now is that you can't hit someone.
You know, what's the Hebrew word used? Shevet?
Shevet, yes. Say shivto. I think to that, you know, I'm old enough to maybe some other people my age went to school where they hit you.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, okay. Now, if you hit a child in school, there's a policeman waiting to arrest you before you leave the building. Right? Okay, so that can change in a generation. Right? It can change very quickly. If you got beat by a teacher, you came home from school and your parent beat you more because you... What did you do to make a teacher beat you? Right? So situation has changed, but it just says, the pasuk just says that, you know, Adon Yahu could get away with anything, because, you know, look, it would appear that Amnon behaved the same way. Right? He's weighing in the balance: be the next king of Israel or have my way with my sister. Why did he he chose his sister? Because, hey, I can get away with anything, right? I'll get a good lawyer and I'll make a payoff and shine. The Tzadok HaKohen, Pesach Ches. No, I'm sorry. V'yud v'arav im Yoav ben Tzruya bim Eviatar HaKohen v'yazru acharei Adon Yahu. And his words appealed to Yoav and Eviatar. Eviatar was the sole survivor from that town that Shaul killed for helping David.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so the Eviatar was David's high priest. It's Kohen Gadol. And Yoav was his chief of the army. Right? So Adonio has the army, and he has the priesthood. Okay? That was probably... How could he not get the Navi? Why didn't he have a meeting with the Navi first? These are very important institutions in Israel, to have the priesthood and the army. Right? The priest doesn't appoint the king, and the army doesn't appoint the king. The Navi does. Right? Now, what's interesting is that in the end of this chapter, Shlomo is going to be anointed. And he's not anointed by the prophet. Explicit instructions are given for the high priest to anoint him. We'll have to figure out why. Why did they leave protocol? Until now, prophets, kings are appointed by the prophet.
But how much precedent was there?
It was just Shmuel appointing Shaul and Shmuel appointing David.
Yeah, but that's it.
And the Hanami. Right? So we'll see. We'll see. And from here on, all new dynasties are appointed by the prophet. Mm-hmm. We'll have to get to that. I don't know if we're going to get to it today. But okay. So it says that he took... would you agree with my suggestion? I have no way of proving this, and I'm not familiar with a Medrash that says it. That he purposely did not approach Natan because he felt Natan would not go along with him.
Yeah.
Or you can say he did approach Natan, and Natan said, "I'm not coming along with this."
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. Let's see if the next few psukim favor one of these approaches more than in any other. And if you think, by the way, by any means, why, you know, I think it's certainly a legitimate question to ask: why is he getting the high priest and the head of the army, but not the obvious person who should be on board, which is Natan? There's another prophet. There's God. Shmuel's dead, but there's God, Natan, and Shmuel are the three prophets in this book. So where is God now? Never hear from him again. I don't know. There are actually two priests. There's Tzadok and there's Eviatar. So he takes Eviatar. Right? All right.
We can have two high priests. Now we can have the same time.
So they're... Only one. No, Eviatar is the high priest. He's about to be deposed.
Okay.
He's the one who carries the ephod. He's the one who inquires of Hashem. Until now, right? Okay. Tzadok is not a relative.
Mm-hmm.
By all rights, Eviatar's son should be the next, mm-hmm. the next high priest, right? But look, God has a plan. The plan works out from a long, long time in advance. Eviatar happens to be the great, great, great grandson. Yeah, I think so. I've met many of a man who didn't rebuke his sons.
Mm-hmm.
And God comes to tell him that you're not serving me in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. Now Aaron had four sons. None of them ever died. Elazar and Itamar continued. Elazar had a son named Pinchas.
Yeah.
And Pinchas seems to be around for a good long time. Yeah. He's at the end of Shoftim. Yeah. Pinchas is out there for a long time. That's what makes some commentaries say that the end of Shoftim, with the Pelegish Begiva story, actually happens at the beginning of Shoftim.
Mm-hmm.
It's just put at the end of Shoftim for certain expedient reasons with it. Okay, Pinchas is from Elazar, but Eli is from Itamar. We know it's from Divrei Yamim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Aaron had two sons, and although Elazar produced Pinchas, which seems to be the high priesthood, Itamar produces that city with Achimelech, who unfortunately helped David, and then they were all wiped out. But this one survives. He joins David because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? Shaul wants to kill you, Shaul wants to kill me, that must mean we should be friends, let's join forces, right? So Eviatar serves David well. He serves him, he goes into exile with him from Avshalom, and he inquires of God for David all the time, and it works. But this time, the high priest, he messes up. Wouldn't you press the buttons and ask God?
Yes.
God, is this a good idea? You know, he inquired of God for David many times. All right, but he got caught up, he got swept up this Shlomo was 12 years old, Adoniyahu was probably in his 40s or 50s. Who would think that this 12-year-old is going to be a better king? Right? But he whatever the reason is, he does not appeal to the prophet. And the only answers we can give are Yitochein, perhaps he felt, I think it's more likely that he felt it unworthy to even ask the prophet, because I don't know if he's going to go along with this. Let me just get facts on the ground. Let me be king for the nation, and then the prophet will have to go along with it.
Did we say any place with which son join Abishalom against rebellion with the David, or no? Only Abishalom was only one son.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
Because I know maybe if you say the same mother, maybe the same mother. I know they have only one son.
There are two lists of David's sons. Of quite a few sons, but that's in Shmuel. But in Divrei Hayamim, it says he had many, many, many dozens and dozens and scores of sons.
Never say those. Question.
Right. Yeah.
But Tzadok becomes the priest who participates in the coronation of Shlomo.
Yes.
So the question is, Hashem promised the Brit Shalom to Apincha, so how can be, high priest, it's something like this one, because we know...
Brit Shalom does not necessarily mean that the high priesthood will go through you in perpetuity. There are two lines, and they'll go back and forth. You have the Windsors, and you have... Alright, so it says, V'tzadok ha-kohen, uv'nayahu ben Yehoyada, v'nosan ha-navi. So here, Tzadok is listed first, then Benayahu. Who's this Benayahu? So he's the head of... seems he's the head of the archers and the slingers.
Maybe it's Praetorian Guard. Maybe it's the Praetorian Guard guy?
Yeah.
Chief of the guards?
Yeah, could be. He in Chazal, he's very mystical. He's does great miracles in battle. Okay, so... And it mentions Shimi. Wow. Shimi v'Rei, v'Agiborim Hashel David. Shimi is the guy from Shevet Binyamin, who at first cursed David, but then made peace with him. Rei, not mentioned. It could be his friend. I don't know. It's probably the name of a person. Rei, and all the Giborim Hashel David lo hayu im Adoniyahu. They did not go over to Adoniyahu. So David still commanded some loyalty. But the head of the army went over to. This is now, look, now in Venezuela, you're reading about the fact that many of the lower soldiers seem to want to side with the people. But the upper guys who are, stand to be killed right away, I don't know, maybe who knows what the situation is, but we'll see how that plays out soon. Okay. Vayizbach Adoniyahu tzon uvakor umari im eben azocheles. Asher Eitzel in Rogel, Vayikra es kol echov bnei hamelech ulchol anshei Yehuda avdei hamelech. And Adoniyahu made a big barbecue, celebration.
Like a Hashverosh.
Yeah. And he called all his brothers. Right? Now it says he called them. Does that mean they all went?
No.
He invited all his brothers. Who went and who didn't go? You went if you felt that, you're siding with the right person.
Right.
Everybody wants to side with the winner, right? People don't vote on principle in these times. They vote with who they feel is going to be the winner. And you can understand it. Like, whether life is in the balance, I don't know. If Bathsheba said, my son and I are going to be in big trouble, going to be missing a lot if Adoniyahu becomes king. Does she mean to say that that's unique to us because we weren't invited? I mean, according to this pasuk, Shlomo is the only one not invited. It's quite obvious that Shlomo is being singled out as the greatest threat to all the brothers. Right? So he,
where does it say that Shlomo wasn't invited?
It's coming up.
Next slide.
It's coming up.
There's nothing on Navi Vinerva is a gibber as Shlomo Achiv Lokara. He didn't call Navi. He didn't call Benayahu.
Yeah, so he's clearly being singled out. you don't have long for this world.
Why doesn't it say they didn't call Tzadok? I don't know if it has to say. He already has a Kohen. He has Avyatar.
Doesn't need it.
Yeah.
He needs one Kohen. Okay. All right, so now, how does Nasa know about this? I don't know. He read it in the paper. Or he's a prophet. He's supposed to know. Aim Shlomo. Just to remind the reader, in case you forgot. And he says, Lemor, Halo Shamat ki malach Adoni Yehu ben Chagit. Did you hear that Adoni Yehu ben Chagit has crowned himself? Who usually crowns a king?
Some religious person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually a king dies, they say, God save the king, long live the king. The king dies, a second later there's another king, right? Mm-hmm. So here, Adon Yehu ben Chagit, he's going against all protocol, he crowns himself king. Who does that? V'adonenu David lo yada, and Batsheva, our master, David, does not know about this. I know. Now I'm giving, I have to give you advice. Look at what he says. Umalti esnaf sheikh ves nefesh b'nech Shlomo. And save your life and the life of Shlomo, your son. Because if this man becomes king, he will kill you and your son.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As the only threat to him. And he'll come through with it. So he says, and I'll save your life. Hello, ata aduni hamelech nishpat alam aschol emor ki shlomo b'neichim locha charai v'hu yoshev al kisi umadu amalach aduni yahu. So go to the king and say, David, didn't you remember you promised me that Shlomo would be the king? And are you aware of the fact that Adoni Yahu rules in Yerushalayim? Right? And you're not aware of it. She embellishes a little bit about what is happening, because she wants to make it seem as if the Adon Yahu is inviting the whole world. Right? The eyes of the whole land, the people, is upon you. They want to know who is going to sit on your throne after you. Now, most nations know that that's supposed to be the oldest son.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been such a balagan in this family as a direct result of the prophecy of Nasan, what would happen in the wake of Bathsheba. The oldest son is dead. Second son is not interested. The third son is dead. Right? So the eyes of the people are upon you. Who shall rule after you? V'haya kishchav Adoni HaMelech im avosav, v'hayisi ani uvni Shlomo chato'im. If you go to sleep with your fathers now, right? Because he knows, she knows, the end is nigh. And if you go and you don't take care of business right now, I and my son Shlomo will be, and she says, Chato'im. It says, in the English here, it says, I and my son Shlomo will be deemed sinners.
Meaning, so it's like the target, isn't it?
She has to be stoned.
Isn't that a target? It also says the word, like Matara.
Matara Lachetz.
Mr. Mark.
Yeah. I think here, Chato'im means like something missing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be missing something, but we deemed sinners, meaning the king will find something in us to as a pretext to kill us, which is what Shlomo does to Adon Yahu. He finds a small little pretext. What's the pretext?
He plotted with Joab again to get Abishag.
Right. He plotted with Bathsheba. He tried to get Bathsheba to get there. She didn't see anything wrong in it, or maybe she, you know. But she does ask for him. He wanted to marry Avishai. Was he making a statement by it? No, I don't think so. He just thought she was pretty. She was a prize for him. You think he was using it to get... Okay. Avishag was with the king. And we know that it's in some nations it's treasonous to be with anyone who was set aside for the king. Right? You don't have to, you know, greet Macbeth or Hamlet or, you know, other famous works where, you know, like as if the Haman was being told, will you Kovacious Hamalchus in your babayis? When you, someone takes the queen, it's the same as taking the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, that's what Achashverosh accuses Haman of.
Right, that's the whole Gemara's point. Isn't
yeah.
That she brought that out in him by inviting him all that time. All this time is a... You know. Okay. All right, so we'll have to stop here. I'm sorry the time ran out. But she's saying that David, the eyes of the people are waiting upon you. Right? Okay, so then Nassan is about to interrupt, and then David gets his point across. And basically, Nassan saves the kingdom. Mm-hmm. But don't know rules here. It's I can't. What can I predict?
But, so meanwhile, the Urim V'Thummim don't seem to play a role in this.
So there's something about, we're about to read something called the Krasi V'Haplasi. A Krasi V'Haplasi. Rav Bracha says the Krasi V'Haplasi was the Urim V'Thummim. It's not the Pshat. Pshat the Krasi V'Haplasi are archers and slingers, but which our English translation here does say. That's not amazing? Yeah. Throughout Shmuel, even in Shmuel Aleph, David is constantly inquiring of God. And you would think that Avyatar, who's carrying the ephod, who used it to inquire of God,
would just go down to the party and say, hey, what is this?
Yeah, because especially the Torah says, point someone that God will choose for you. It's a bit of a pella. But we'll see next week how the story unfolds. And it's very interesting that at the end of the next chapter, it's not going to be Nosson who crowns him, it's going to be Tzadok who crowns him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll see, why do we move from the prophet to the high priest? Okay, Marav, next door, Chevron.
The prisoner upstairs.